Don't let him fool you. Keep down or you're a dead pigeon.
Don't worry. Watch that high wind in the D cell block. Keep it covered.
Doc!
He's trying to pick off the guard in the tower.
There they are! Let him have it!
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, August 4th, 1946, we present the 38th in the distinguished NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today:
the prisons we deserve.
This is Robert St. John in New York. Just over 3 months ago, the tracer bullets were lighting the night sky over Alcatraz during a desperate mass escape attempt. That event led millions of Americans to ask searching questions about the part played by our prisons in the unending struggle against crime. What people are thinking about prisons is enormously important, for it is American public opinion, or the lack of it, that is giving us today
the prisons we deserve.
This is Robert McCormick in Washington. Today you will hear the voices of two men who speak from personal experience of the inside of American prisons. Both are ex-convicts. One was at Alcatraz. From Washington, you will hear the voice of the director of the Federal Bureau of Prisons, James V. Bennett. And for the first time in the history of radio, we shall bring you a broadcast direct from Alcatraz. We are standing by.
How long have they been at it now?
Oh, 24 hours, about. Doesn't seem to be any let-up, either.
I don't know what good this is doing my paper. Riding around in this tub. Why don't they let us on the rock?
Are you kidding? Do you think those Alcatraz boys care whether they're plugging reporters or guards? I'll wait.
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder.
Good for you.
No kidding, though. What's the point of spending good money to keep those guys alive? Murderers, kidnappers, gunmen.
The simplest reason in the world. To make an example of them. Just another way of proving that one of the best ways of making money is to work for a living.
So, do they prevent crime that way? No. Cure it? No. It's a waste of money.
You know, Bill, from up here on the hill, it looks almost like a castle on an island.
Some castle.
Look at that.
Yeah, a tracer bullet. Boy, I wouldn't want to be those guys. They even got the Marines out. They must have been crazy.
Oh, I don't know. I read a book about an ex-convict once.
Yeah?
Uh-huh, and the fella pointed out the way it's not always their fault.
Listen, if one of them sticks a gun in your ribs, who cares if it's not his fault?
Well, I felt sorry for the man just the same.
Sorry? Listen, here's what you don't realize. Those guys are what they call enemies of society, see? Hopeless criminals.
You're wrong, buddy. It isn't always hopeless. I was a prisoner in Alcatraz, but I got away. No, I didn't bust out. One day I decided it was no good. You can't beat the United States government. So from then on, I tried keeping my copper. That's prison talk for keeping a clean record. Paid dividends. The warden began to trust me. Today, I'm one of 300 guys who were sent back from Alcatraz.
And that man, a convict for 27 years for robbery and assault, kept on going straight. At this moment, he's standing at a National Hour microphone in a city somewhere in the United States. We take you now to hear the voice of an ex-convict from Alcatraz.
Yes, Mr. St. John. I guess that day when the warden's wife trusted me, made me realize there were advantages to going straight. So after 9 years on Alcatraz, they sent me back to an ordinary prison. And in the last 5 years, I learned in the prison workshop to be a newspaper typographer. Last year, they let me out on parole. And now, I'm a member of the union, and I am working in the press room of a newspaper here in this city. From now on, I'm going to keep right on playing it straight.
This is Robert McCormick again in Washington. You've just heard the actual voice of a former Alcatraz convict speaking from a city somewhere in the United States. His story gives us the first hint that the popular picture of Alcatraz as a grim fortress is not quite a true one. The picture of prisoners without hope, without future, with no road back, is a highly exaggerated notion. It was built up by the crime stories, the movies, the radio broadcasts. To go back to the beginning, Alcatraz was born during the roaring 20s of Chicago gang wars. And no one was more impressed by these underworld adventures than our school children. They were thoroughly familiar with the exploits of Public Enemies 1 through 10.
I got you, Shawty. You're dead. You're a corpse.
Go on. I'm Al Capone. My bodyguard got you first.
Oh, what if you're Al Capone? I'm Machine Gun Kelly.
Look at him. Kelly and a shrimp like you?
Yeah, well, my brother says I look just like his pictures in the papers when he was a kid.
All right, so you're Machine Gun Kelly.
No, I changed my mind. I'm gonna be Babyface Nelson.
Okay, then I'm gonna do Dillinger, the greatest killer of them all. The man the G-Man is afraid of me.
The man who was then Attorney General of the United States, Homer Cummings, from his office in Washington, spoke on the telephone to President Roosevelt.
What we need, Mr. President, is a symbol that will counteract the influence of gangsterdom. Something that will dramatize the retribution that eventually will catch up with every gangster. We need not only a prison from which men cannot escape, but a place where we can send the troublemakers. And those who are...
So in 1934, Alcatraz became what is officially called a prison of maximum security. That does not mean cruelty or physical hardship to the prisoner. It does mean the most stringent discipline for hardened and unrepentant criminals of the worst type. When one of those arrives on Alcatraz, he is told what to expect by the receiving officer.
You will get the same food here as at any other federal prison. You work a normal 8-hour day. You can write letters just as in any other federal prison. But you'll have no radio in your cell, no commissary, no candy. Only one visitor a month. You'll be treated fairly and firmly. And you will be allowed credit for good behavior and good work. You earned your way here, but you can earn your way back. This is no dead end.
Yet year after year, the story of the grimness of Alcatraz has grown in the public mind out of all proportion to the truth. And no one is more troubled over this than officials of the Bureau of Prisons here in Washington. After the riot, the problem of the future of Alcatraz was discussed at an unofficial press conference.
You see, gentlemen, the trouble with all that riot publicity is that it keeps building up the idea of an unbridgeable gap between normal, decent people as one class and incurable criminals as another. The old enemy of society stuff.
Would you care to say why you think that's bad?
Certainly. It has a bad psychological effect on all other prisoners. Makes them feel it's hopeless to try and reform. In my opinion, there are very few criminals who come under the enemy of society heading.
But tell me, sir, those tough incurables, you've got to have somewhere safe to put them.
Oh, sure, you've got to have a place like Alcatraz, but I'd forget those boys, not give them a build-up.
Oh, then what's the answer to this problem of the prisons?
Gentlemen, if you could go through our files at the prison bureau, if you could read actual case histories of prisoners, if you could see the forces at work...
So the National Hour did look into the files of the Bureau of Prisons here in Washington. We looked into the background of many federal prisoners and tried to uncover the forces that drive these long-term criminals. And from these records, we chose the story of one typical prisoner and his journey along the disastrous criminal road.
This is Robert St. John in New York. That ex-convict we are going to portray is a man who has spent a large part of his life in jail ever since he was 7 years old. We shall call him Rudy the Kid.
I guess you'd say I got into crime accidentally. I was born in Detroit. My father drank himself to death. My mother had a hard job to keep things going. It was cold in winter, and we didn't have enough coal. I was 7 at the time, and with a pal of mine, I used to go down to the coal dump outside the power plant.
Hey, Shorty, can your eyes freeze like ice?
If they ain't freezing now, I don't know.
Yeah, I want to get home. Let's get some coal and beat it.
Hey, look at that, Rudy. A whole line of coal cars full.
Yeah. Boy, that'd be easier than picking up off the tracks.
There ain't nobody around. Go on up there and pitch it down.
Okay, but you lay, Chicky.
And get the big pieces, Rudy.
Hold your bag open. I'll pitch them in. Catch!
Got it. Boy, them is big lumps, all right. Chicky, Rudy, Chicky, jump off the other side.
Okay, you little runt. Come on down there. Come on down.
Okay, mister. I'm coming.
Robbing coal cars, huh? I don't know what's the matter with you kids.
What you gonna do with me, mister? What you gonna do?
You'll see, you little smart aleck. We'll learn you to steal from the power company.
Let the mother of this boy approach the bench.
You apparently have encouraged your son to steal coal from the power company. That is bad enough. It is encouraging juvenile delinquency. But there's an even more serious aspect to this case. I gather that you are unable to give this boy proper care. You must understand that the court is doing the best thing for your son by sending him to a place where at least he will receive good moral instruction, get proper food and clothing, and have an opportunity to learn a useful trade. The court is committing him for the next 8 years to the industrial home.
So that's how I became a technical criminal. With no more idea that I was committing a crime than a cat that upsets a bottle of milk in your kitchen. I don't think you can say that I was naturally a bad character. And you can't blame my mother. She had to work day and night to earn the rent and the food. She died before I got out of the industrial home. So I had nowhere to go. No friends, except the other boys who had been released. And whenever I try to get a job...
Since I saw you yesterday, I had a little talk with the police. You've got quite a record.
Yes, sir. But you see, sir, I've learned my lesson.
You have?
Yes, sir.
Well, my boy, I'm afraid you learned it a little too late for me. Good afternoon.
So naturally, I associated more and more with the guys I used to know at the industrial home. One night, a couple of them took me to a spot just out of town to show me how they were running bootleg booze across the Canadian border. They wanted me to join them, but I didn't like the idea. Before I could make up my mind, the police arrived. The others got away, but I was caught and taken to the police station.
Hey, you've got quite a record, my boy. Seems we had some trouble with you before. I'm going to hold you on suspicion. Until we get some more dope, you're cooling off in the county jail.
After 5 days, they knew they had nothing on me, so they let me go. But in those 5 days, I began to learn about prison life. We were all mixed in together. Old men and children. A school kid who'd run away from home. A boy who was in for stealing a bicycle. And a tough old timer waiting trial. There was also a kangaroo court, set up by the prisoners themselves. was allowed by the sheriff to keep order. But some of those prisoners were really bad. They behaved like Nazis in a concentration camp. One day, a kid was brought into the big room where we were all together in the daytime.
Okay, get in there and keep quiet.
Hey, come here, kid. What are you in for?
Who are you?
I'm the clerk of the kangaroo court here. I said, what are you in for?
They picked me up for driving my dad's car without a license. I'm not old enough for a license.
How old are you?
14.
Oh, yeah? Well, for my money, you're here for breaking into jail. We fine you $5, and I know you got it up in the front office.
But I don't have any money, I tell you.
Oh, yeah? Give no words, yeah, fellas.
That kid died of the beating he got from the hoodlums of that kangaroo court. That's the county jail, where thousands of people all over the country get thrown every day. And most of them are poor people who can't make bond.
And here in Washington, those strong personal views of Rudy the Kid are backed up by the official reports of dozens of federal jail inspectors.
Out of 3,000 county jails inspected, less than 500 were approved for the housing of federal prisoners.
In one Texas jail, the sheriff established a schedule of prices for favors. 50 cents for a deck of cards, $2 for a drink of liquor, $5 for a shot of dope.
The place was filthy beyond description.
The building was a fire trap.
Worse than a pig pen.
Many times, it's in that same county jail that young offenders meet some big shot criminal who paints a rosy picture of the easy money way. That's how it was with Rudy the Kid.
Yes. It was my first time in a county jail that I met 8-Ball Eddie. He was a scientific burglar, a very smart guy. He knew all the answers. Eddie convinced me, and I became his partner in burglary. But of course, at last they got us. They tried me for grand larceny, and the jury found me guilty.
Will the prisoner approach the bench?
How old are you, son?
20, Your Honor.
Do you have anything to say before sentence is passed upon you?
Well, Your Honor, I guess I got in a bad company.
Did you ever try to get a job?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. But wherever I go, they find out that I have a criminal record, and they kick me out.
Where's your family?
I haven't any, Your Honor. I haven't any real home, Your Honor.
In other words, you're just a tramp. Isn't that so?
No, sir, I'm not. At least I try to get white.
I see. I want you to know that... I understand that life hasn't been very kind to you. And maybe you're not to blame. The law requires that you be punished. It sets out the limit. The court hereby sentences you to 10 years at hard labor. 10 years at hard labor.
Take it easy, kid. Once you get used to the size of the cell, you'll like it here. What's your name?
They call me Rudy the Kid.
You can call me Joey. Joey the Rat. Is this your first stretch, kid?
Yeah. Unless you count the industrial home.
Well, this ain't the best stir in the country, but it's a long ways from being the worst. You watch. You'll like it.
Well, Joey the Rat knew what he was talking about. In some states, for instance, New York, New Jersey, California, we have our better prison systems. But in the others, it's almost a crime to use them. The Federal Prison Bureau in Washington has been requested to carry out inspections of various state prisons.
In at least 2 states, there are still chain gang shackles and sweat boxes.
In 1 southern state, prisoners are armed with guns and allowed to patrol the prison as guards.
The prison systems of many states need complete physical and personnel overhaul.
The man who has been through the experiences we've described is standing now before a microphone in the studios of KSTP in St. Paul, Minnesota. He will provide us with the ending to his prison story. He will remain unidentified. Come in, St. Paul.
Yes, Mr. St. John. I was in good prison and bad ones. And in the end, I got to the federal pen at Atlanta. I had my difficulties there at first. I couldn't face having to stay in for that long a sentence. I thought of nothing but escape. In fact, I once had myself nailed into a box that was loaded on an outgoing car. But of course, I was caught. But they kept right on trying to find out what I could do best. I became interested in writing, so they put me on the prison magazine. That seemed to give me a new slant on life. And at last, I was discharged. And now I work for a living, writing. And I'm positive that I'll never see the inside of a prison again.
In many ways, that man's story is a typical one. There are thousands of men in American prisons whose introductions to crime were the same as his. Now, who is to say how many of them are the product of the faults of our prison system? Well, here beside me in our Washington studio is the man who has spent the last 10 years as director of the United States Federal Bureau of Prisons. He is James V. Bennett, and he has the responsibility not only for Alcatraz, but also for 5 of our largest prisons, as well as a score of camps and reformatories and training schools for delinquents. Mr. Bennett, what is your view on the role of our prisons in the struggle against crime?
Well, Mr. McCormick, the prisons must protect the public in every sense of the word. This requires, of course, that men who prey on society must be locked up. They cannot be allowed to thwart the orders of the court by escaping or through coddling or by getting special privileges. But this does not mean harsh and vindictive punishment. Men go to prison as punishment and are not for punishment. So we must treat each man as an individual, find out his needs, his problems, and the reasons for his behavior, and try to change and correct them. To do this, prison work must first of all be considered a professional job. It's just as much a professional career as running a hospital or a college, and so personnel standards must be improved. Another need is better housing. Not every man has to be locked in a cage like a wild beast. In the prisons of the future, we will depend more on brains and less on bars. Again, crime is a countrywide problem, and failure of one state to reform its prisoners makes them a danger to every citizen everywhere. So all states and all prisons ought to find a way to work together in a national program. And, Mr. McCormick, if the prisoners do a better job in the struggle against crime, it must have a larger voice in determining how long a man should stay in prison.
Well, is anything being done about this?
Yes, there is, Mr. McCormick. My able chief, Mr. Tom Clark, the Attorney General, has long recognized this problem in his capacity as chief of federal law enforcement. He has a very realistic and long-range point of view, and so he has endorsed and is urging the adoption of a law which would leave sentencing in the hands of the courts, but make it possible for the judges to delay final sentence until the man could be studied by a board of experts. The court would then act on the basis of the reports and recommendations of an experienced board. This plan would be particularly helpful with the more youthful offenders. And, Mr. McCormick, if the prison is to do its job, they can't all be alike. Different men require different types of treatment.
Well, you mean, then, that more flexibility, more specialized programs are needed?
Precisely. And we cannot provide enough of these because you and I and the people of the United States have not made up our minds just what we want our prisons to do. That is why I agree with you that the American people have today and will have in the future the prisons we deserve.
Thank you, Mr. Bennett.
From the prison camps, where the men live and work on the honor system without bars or barbed wire, often without the immediate supervision of guards, it's a long, long jump to the fortress of Alcatraz. Yet there's one thing that does link all these federal institutions. It's the hope held by every federal prison official that the prisoner may one day return to a normal, decent life. That hope lives even on Alcatraz. Today, for the first time in radio history, NBC has received permission to set up microphones on The Rock in San Francisco Bay. We take you now to NBC reporter Elmer Peterson on the island of Alcatraz.
One of the most trying times I ever experienced. With the help of a fine and courageous group of prison officers, we were successful in protecting the public by preventing the escapes. Unfortunately, two of our faithful officers lost their lives, and nine were wounded. As I talk with the men here at Alcatraz, and study them, and try to deal with them, these specially selected difficult problem cases, I often think of what might have been if they had received more care and attention in their early years. I feel that some of them would have turned out better if the public took more interest in them the first time they violated the law. If at first they had been sentenced under a plan of study, of classification, of segregation, as the federal government is now developing, they might have been drawn away from the criminal gangs that at that time menaced the country. If the force of public opinion had been exerted to influence the proper training and treatment of young offenders, there might be fewer men under my supervision here at Alcatraz.
Thank you, Warden Johnston. This is Elmer Peterson returning you from Alcatraz Island to the National Hour in New York.
The prisons we deserve was the subject of our documentary, and this is what we have learned.
That the crime problem is a national responsibility. That our present system of fixed-term sentences means that many prisoners are ready for release long before their sentence has expired, while other criminals who may never become law-abiding have to be released because their sentence has been completed. That although there is no single answer to the problem yet, improvements in court procedure, police methods, and correctional systems must keep step with our growing understanding of the psychology of crime. That in this age of gigantic scientific progress, some of our methods for treating human misconduct are still way back in the dark ages.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York, Washington, from an unnamed western city, from St. Paul, Minnesota, and from the island of Alcatraz, NBC has brought you the 38th in this series. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.